Hello and welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 395 and holy crap, we're funded already for episode 400. We only announced it on last week's episode, and that has only been out in the wild for 4 days as of this recording, and we already hit our goal, which is crazy and surprising, and definitely not expected, and it's left me really just kind of speechless all day. So I'll try to put some words to it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone who donated. We're really astonished and gratified.
And shocked. It kind of makes us think, like, why don't we ask for money all the time?
Yeah. I need a new boat. No. I mean, all the
for your life on a mountain, you need a new boat.
You know, like, I think for the size of our audience, we set a pretty modest goal for this because it is based on what we literally think it's going to cost. I mean, there's no margin in there. And everything that we plan to spend the money on is written right there in the article. So, it's, you know, it's not a huge goal, but we met it with the help of a lot of people, a lot of, donations, big and small and everything in between. And we got some amazing comments from people. And I'm so thankful for those. So, thank you everyone who donated, and in fact, we met our goal so quickly that some people wanted to donate and didn't even get a chance to because the whole thing closed down before they were even able to get over there. So for those people, I've put up sort of an action plan and some further words on our website, on the blog, on the campaign page. So if you've been there before, you know how to get back to it and you can read more about it. But basically, the gist of it is, we would love if you would hold your donation for the Child's Play Telethon that will be coming up roughly a month after RFN 400 and give to a great charity instead, because we don't need extra. We're not planning to need any extra beyond what we asked for, and we don't have any stretch goals. This whole thing is a stretch goal on top of what we would have done anyway. So. This is it's real, guys. It's happening, and I can't thank you enough. I'm really blown away by it. So we now have a lot to plan.
Every one of you is great except Billy, who's a true monster. Billy, you are a monster, and you should feel ashamed. That's all I'm going to say.
We love you, Billy. Anyway, we do have to get to a real episode here, number 395. My head is so in the space of 400 the past week, but it feels
weird that we're this close.
Yes, it's very, like, weird. Really, it's like a month away, a little bit more than a month away. We will have an off week in there somewhere. It might be next week. It might be a little farther. We're not sure yet. We're planning it out still. But as soon we will have an off week, and then the timing will work out for us to record 400 at the end of September. And I'm hoping, because of the way we're going to record it, which is in a professional studio with an engineer, we should not need any post editing, at least for the main part of it. Woo-hoo. And we should be able to get that out to you relatively quickly. And as for the parts of, you know, the highlight reel of all the people who donated a certain amount and get to choose a classic clip from the show to be in the highlight, we can put that together ahead of time. So I'm hoping that we can mash it all together and just release this huge, great episode 400 right after we record it and at the end of September. But we'll see. I can't make any guarantees now, but I'm super excited. We have so much work to do. But most urgently, we need to do this episode, number 395. So let's jump into it, guys, with new business. And we'll start with Guillaume.
Yes, Guillaume, that is me. I'm Guillaume. We skipped the introduction. Yeah, I know. But yeah, so I just want to quickly go back to the Console Wars book, which I finally finished. And I got to say, freaking CEOs, just, you know, unable to take ownership for any failing that they might have had. It's really, you know, we talked last week about how the story was really one-sided, but Jesus Christ, like, it's really, the books, it goes into very great detail. into like how Sega kind of gained so much market share and really, you know, like it was really a huge thorn in the side of Nintendo, which was a giant, you know, like which seemed to be absolutely unbeatable. And they actually, you know, beat in sales the Super Nintendo for a while. But then as soon as things, as the tide turns, there's suddenly way less detail. And it seems like the author didn't talk to anyone who was getting on the boat after the dude sank it. And it's just, yeah, like, I don't know.
Is it that there's big holes, or does it just feel like very made up and just sort of fanciful?
Well, basically, and I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for anyone who wasn't there or who's not conscious of their video game
history.
Wasn't
alive in the mid-90s.
But yeah, Sega kind of died after, like, the Genesis was.
They shat the bed.
Yeah, they didn't die.
Yeah.
They didn't die. They're still around. They're hanging on by a thread. But they threw it all away.
1.25 million.
They lived on the street for a while, and you know, it's just a horrible, horrible, sordid tale of what happened with Sega. It was a huge disaster, and then they made the final. Last gasp with Dreamcast, and then they basically messed that up too.
I mean, they basically mess up everything they've touched ever in their history.
Pretty much, yeah.
Super Hang-On is not a good game.
The Genesis was really their only successful console, and was really only successful in North America and Europe a little bit, although the book doesn't get into that.
I would say that the Master System was somewhat successful in Europe.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was. Yeah, the book doesn't touch on that either. But anyway, like the book basically, as soon as like Donkey Kong Country comes out, that's identified as one of the things that, you know, helps Nintendo win the console war. And also, they kind of put all the blame on Sega of Japan's, which is, you know, probably. There's probably truth to that. Like, it does sound like the relationship between Sony of Japan and
Sega.
It does sound like the relationship between Sega of Japan and Sega of America was pretty damn strained, and it does sound like, you know, like the weird cultural problems and differences led to some really bad missteps. But it's funny because towards the end, like, they just raised the question, could I have done things differently to maybe, to ensure more continued success, or is really, you know, or
navel gazing?
We really did the impossible and blah, 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 and I probably wouldn't change a thing.
Really?
It's like, really?
What, aside from succeeding?
I wouldn't change a thing, like, except we're fucking not terrible at making games.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they don't. I don't know. Like, I find it really weird that he would be like, no, I would still do things the exact same way. And like, really? Come on. Like, the blame does lie a lot with him, I think, because Tom Kalinske, I'm talking about the CEO of Sega of America, because there's just, you know, like, they spent on marketing as much money as they were making. It's like, you know, he was spending money like a CEO.
Guillaume.
You know,
you gotta spend money to make money.
Well, yeah, that phrase comes up in the book at least
I'm
once.
Sure it does.
I bet it does.
Professional CEOs are the worst.
There's so little said about Nintendo strategies and stuff, and they basically don't reflect at all on the fact that Nintendo was more conservative and ended up winning because of that. And because they were more prudent.
It is the tortoise in the hair,
Nintendo carpet bombed
no
them out of existence on the Super Nintendo. Eventually, the tidal wave of software just crushed them.
Well, and a lot of it third party. I mean, it wasn't just Nintendo going into psycho mode, but it was everything. It was Square. You know, Square wasn't making games on Genesis. You know, I mean, after a while, Capcom wasn't anymore. I think, you know, they did for a couple of years there with
and most of the Capcom
Fighter,
versions were just. On Genesis games were not good.
Yeah. So all the big companies really were focused much more on Super Nintendo. And of course, then you also had Nintendo, who were basically in their prime. So that's very hard to compete with. I mean, you know, I would say he should be proud of his time at Sega in that they were competitive.
Sure.
And for a while they were the leaders and they made a huge name for themselves. And they then flushed all that down the toilet and fucked over all of their shareholders and their fans.
Right.
So good job, buddy. Yeah.
Yep. Kudos to you.
Anyway, I just find it very convenient that the one point of view that we get, like, it's everyone else's fault, and Sega of Japan did apparently put the, you know, impose the 32X on them and impose the Saturn on them, and it's all, you know, they're all good points. I'm sure they didn't help, but the guy takes no responsibility for what happened to Sega of America, and I just, I can't really accept that.
And he got himself on the back the whole way through.
Yeah, I guess we're going to need another book about Sega if we want the full story. Like, I want someone interviewing people who were there after the Sega Genesis and, you know, tell their experience, because that would also be interesting.
Most of those people have probably already committed seppuku. I don't think I really want to hear their story at all.
I mean, yes, the 32X was a punchline. And
can you imagine being like a higher up in Sega of America, like circa 1995, 96? Like,
I would have
like,
been drunk
that
every
building
day.
Must have been on perpetual fire, like in Synecdoche, New York. Like, what was that atmosphere like? I can't imagine.
I mean, like I said, I would have been drunk every day.
Ugh, I bet a lot of them were. Anyway, let's move on from Radio Free Sega and hear about Rayman Legends, Guillaume.
Sure. So I've been playing Rayman Legends for a while now. I got it. It was on sale in the eShop, and I haven't talked about it yet because it's just every time that Karen and I play it, we play a couple of levels, and we get tired of it really quickly, and we stop. I'm sorry, this is going to be like a really downer of a segment because I'm just, I'm really cranky, I haven't slept well, and everything sucks. But yeah, Rayman Legends, I think it was TYP who first talked about it on the show and who mentioned how disappointing the level selection was. And back at the time, like, I didn't really make much out of it. Like, I was like, well, who cares? Like, the level design is king, and I could select game levels out of a menu, and I would still, you know, like, who cares?
Are you saying that the level selection screen is not good, like the interface by which you choose the level you want to play?
Well, it's really like you're inside the circus tent, it seems, and you go into these different rooms, and you've got these paintings, and you just jump into them to go to the next level, and it feels very not clinical, but it does feel like you're just navigating a menu in a way.
It's just lame. It's just lame. You know, I mean, it's a far, very far cry from like the castle in Super Mario 64, which is essentially the same thing, but with much more care and thought put into it.
Oh yeah, like in Mario,
to rephrase
it's really
that,
it
with
feels
care and thought put into it.
But yeah, like in Super Mario, it feels like a place and it feels magical, right? Like you're whisked away to a different world when you go inside these paintings.
Absolutely.
In Rayman, it's more like, I don't know. Like
it's
a level select screen. Yeah, it feels disconnected. And that leads to Rayman, the game as a whole, feeling kind of a bunch of levels thrown together.
That's fair. Like in Rayman Origins, there was at least a kind of Super Mario World level map, you know, like over an overworld. It was like really crude, but at least you had a sense that the individual levels were taking place inside of a larger region and that they were all sort of geographically connected. Whereas in Legends, you're just teleporting from one to the other. I mean, they don't feel at all. I mean, there's themes, but they don't feel connected like that at all.
Exactly. And it does bother me. And I in Origins, yeah, like the overworld wasn't great, but I was hoping for an improvement on that, not just like, well, you know, let's throw this out and just do whatever.
So I've been argued, you know, against this before, but I felt kind of the same way about Super Mario Galaxy 2. I felt that overworld kind of did that game a disservice because the game is so beautiful and creative and thoughtful all the way through and incredibly diverse. But I like the head, you know, that's like a bonus area because that area is not really very functionally useful. That's not really how you select levels. You select levels by going to this extremely crude, like New Super Mario Brothers on DS kind of overworld thing where you're basically just moving forward, 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 forward.
Yeah.
And it's lame. And it's too bad because, I mean, that game deserves better, I think.
And the new Super Mario games have not been good. The overworlds haven't been good except for...
on Wii U.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The new version was much, much better. That overworld rocks.
It's awesome. Yeah.
And other than the overworld, there's just... I don't know. It's a very... We're always constantly frustrated by the game, and I'm not sure why. There's the controls feel like I can't always predict how Rayman is going to jump, where he's going to land, and that's weird because he's only has I've noticed he only has two heights for his jumps. If you hold the button down, you know, you're going to do the full jump, and if you just tap it, it's going to be half that height. So technically, I should be able to predict where he's going to land, but it always seems to be changing, and I can't seem to get used to it. I can't seem to get used to the physics and the way he moves. Also, there's the fact that we're constantly slapping each other in the game. You know, like every time that you're hitting an enemy...
Oh, you're playing co-op?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, dude, that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, you've already screwed up.
Yeah, that's a... You shouldn't do that.
I don't know. A friend of mine has been playing four players, and played through the whole thing, and so it can be done. So two players, it should be doable, but it's really, really hard. And
I mean, let's be clear. I think it can be done. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it should.
Yeah, right. Agreed.
Well, the thing is, you want to be playing two players, right? Because there's so many levels where you have the game pad. No,
I do not want to be playing the game with two players.
I mean, so here's my reaction. So I played the game single player and thought it was very good 2D platformer. Hmm. I played the levels where you control the Firefly, whatever his name is.
Sure.
Two-player, and I thought those played well. And I played some of the just the 2D platforming levels two-player, and things got a little dicey. But, I mean, I was playing with an asshole myself and an unsuspecting victim. And
an innocent bystander.
And it just turned into just a calamity. But, I mean, granted, we played New Super Mario Bros. U, and it turned into a complete travesty. So,
oh, yeah, yeah. Very few multiplayer 2D platformers, I think, are easier or equally difficult with multiple people. I think in general, most of them get harder, especially when the characters actually interact with each other in some way.
I mean, if they just pass through one another.
Yeah, if they're ghosts, then that's a different kind of game, basically. But,
these physics-based platformers. I mean, you can be a real piece. I mean, you can't.
Or even just accidentally knocking each other off into pits and shit. You know, like Rayman in particular, it's so easy.
Everything
to slap somebody.
I did was an accident, Justin. What are you talking about?
So yeah, I don't know. Maybe all my problems stem from the fact that I'm playing co-op. And in Rayman Origins, I played it by myself, and I had an easier time getting into it. So yeah, maybe there's that, but I just, you know, it's more of the same. The graphics, I don't really see the enemies, like they seem the same, and the one thing that bothers me is that the overworld seems like a downgrade, and you always constantly unlock new stuff, and it's really weird, like you're always going around like different rooms trying to find the last thing you unlocked, and it just doesn't feel focused, and it bothers me more than I thought it would. But there are a couple of, you know, cool levels, though, like the ones that they introduced slight stealth elements, I actually kind of like. You're supposed to avoid these spotlights. And there's also some fun co-op moments with that, where someone will, on the gamepad, will move items to cast a shadow that you're going to have to walk through. I thought that was pretty clever, and... I've actually enjoyed those, but then they seem to be already gone. You know, we're already past those levels, and now it's less interesting again. So, I don't know. I haven't fell in love with Rayman Origin Legends.
Well, it does go through several different little small mechanics like that that it'll use for two or three levels, and maybe you'll find a couple more like that, and it'll all kind of add up to a little more satisfaction than you're currently getting from it. But yeah, I think playing co-op is a big part of your troubles. I would be surprised if you didn't enjoy it more playing it by yourself. Not that I don't like co-op games, just this particular game and some like it are infuriating, really.
Yeah, but I did go back to some of the, you know, like to get some of the stuff that we missed. So I did go back by myself going through those levels, and I'm just kind of...
But then you've seen them already, so it's a, that's a little different experience as well.
Yeah, but some of them, like the invaded levels, are quite different. Oh,
those and are, I'm doing I don't those like as those. Well.
Right, I don't like them either.
But also, you can beat the game without really playing most of those. I think you might have to play one or two, but they're largely optional because there's way more stages and little lum dudes, whatever they're called, the little blue things, then you need to actually sort of see the credits roll and get to the final.
But that's part of the problem. There's so much to this game, and it's all like, I'm not really enjoying it.
Sure. It's a big steaming pile is what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, everybody in France should be ashamed.
Yep.
Rayman Legends is a fun game, but it has issues. I mean, it has serious issues, and I think you've found all of them simultaneously. So I hope you can recover from it, because I think it's worth playing. I think you will eventually find more to like in it. But let's move on to Mr. John Lindemann.
Mr. John Lindemann, he is playing Cybernator on Wii U Virtual Console. A Super Nintendo classic. Well, I wouldn't call it a classic, but...
I wouldn't either.
Would John Lindemann call it a classic, though?
He may. What? If he was a
you
fictional
like
character.
That much?
Nah, I mean, it's good. It's okay. It's very typical, because you also got it, too, Guillaume, right?
Well, I got it, but I haven't played it yet.
So
but I remember renting it back in the day.
Did this just
come
out?
Wow, you rented it? Impressive.
It just came out on Wii U, right?
Yeah. It just came out.
I have it on Wii, and let me put it this way: I don't think I'm going to spend $1.50 to upgrade it.
I have it on Super Nintendo, and I'm good. Thanks. I'm good forever.
Yeah. See, I'm learning. Just as a side note, I'm learning all of these games that James owns, and just weird games like certain N64.
You probably don't want to download old games that James owns.
Yeah, certain Nintendo 64 games that James has that will just haunt
me
forever.
Yes, I own a copy of Chef's Love Shack. God damn it.
Hey, I was trying to avoid it. You didn't have to admit it.
It's all right,
so Cybernator. Cybernator.
Yeah, what is that game?
Yes, Cybernator, it is a shooter, much in the vein of something, it's not like a spaceship shooter, but something like Life Force, that type of thing, where you're going horizontally towards the right of the screen, basically. But it's all kind of anime mech stuff, very typical of the early 90s. It's from 93. It was published by Konami, made by a company called NCS, which also made several other sort of B to C tier shooters around that time. And actually, it's what I thought was interesting was it's a prequel to Target Earth, which was made by NCS for the Genesis, because you know people wanted to know the origin story of Target Earth. Lord knows. So they had to make a sequel to it. Or a prequel, I should say. So
now, is this kind of a scrolling shoot 'em up? Because I thought this was more of like it's a little bit of a platformer with a lot of shooting where you're controlling this giant robot.
Yeah,
and
that's my question.
And...
That's part of my question. Like, John, did you get past the first level?
Yes, I did. I played all the way to the end of the second level, and the boss stonewalled me because it's so goddamn hard.
At some point, you do, like, there is gravity in this game, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's a mix of platforming, but then, and like, they also take you out into space, and you're flying around, so it's sort of a mix.
I just forgot about
the majority of the game. You're a big stompy robot, but occasionally you're a big stompy robot in space.
Yeah, but you can also fly around. You have like a boost rocket jet kind of thing.
But it
so you
feels
can fly
really
around for
heavy
limited,
and
limited
slow,
times.
Doesn't it, when you're walking around?
The controls,
a giant-ass mech.
Yeah, the controls are definitely... The controls aren't bad. It's just the way that you control your mech is problematic because you have... Mm-hmm. And it really comes to the forefront in the second level because the first one is just kind of a... You know, it's sort of a just, you know, figure out the control sort of level. And, you know, you're doing a lot of platforming and things are easy to kill. And you have two different guns. Well, you have a gun that runs out. It's sort of like has to recharge. Like you know you'll shoot it for a while and you'll see its little meter go down to zero.
It has clips, essentially.
Yeah, kind of. And then so it has to. So that's kind of annoying because this is the kind of game where they're always throwing enemies at you, right? So you really just want to hit. You know, just hold down your fire button and just keep shooting. But it kind of, you know, you have to sit there and you're like, oh, gotta let my gun recharge. Okay, you blast, 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 blast. Oh, gotta let my gun recharge. So that's kind of annoying. You can shoot in eight directions, which is cool, but
really hard to do.
Well, it never. The thing is,
it's
never
not great.
It never comes back to. It never snaps you back to a default. You know, just facing forward with your gun.
Right.
So
right.
So if you're facing down diagonally with your gun shooting downwards, you'll stay that way. So even though you're flying around the screen, you'll still stay pointed downwards. Now the problem with that is
yes. It's totally independent of your movement, and
exactly.
it makes it feel very semi, like a simulation met game, like a PC thing, except that the game is still built much more like a fast-paced action game. It feels like everything's mm-hmm. moving way faster than you, is my
but you can soak up a lot of damage.
Of this game.
Exactly.
Like, it's not a one-hit kill thing.
Yeah, but...
I mean, yeah, you're a big stompy thing, and everything else is just designed mm-hmm. to just be swarming.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem, especially, I mean, where I got stopped is the second boss. I mean, I'm not too sure if he's I don't know if he's the end boss or maybe a mid-level boss, but he's this like mobile artillery thing that comes out of you're going through an asteroid belt. So the first part of it is you're kind of dodging these asteroids. You know, it's kind of a forced sort of dodging thing. So the screen is consistently scrolling, right to left. And
he's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, and you have to dodge the rocks as they come towards you, right? So there's that kind of element. But then it slows down, and you're in this kind of space, base kind of part where you're shooting cannons, and things on the ground are shooting at you, and you can walk down onto the ground, but then you can also launch off of the rocks. But the problem is, where you move, you can only mm-hmm. move in one direction at a time, and of course. You are forced, because of the way you control your gun, you are forced to also shoot in whatever direction you move.
Right, but okay, John, you can hold the L button to lock your gun in place, just like the later Contra games.
Can I? Okay, I was wondering about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And it does help a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's still slow to move your gun around.
Yeah,
because
I was like, Jesus, there has to be some mm-hmm. way to lock my gun. So, but that doesn't really help you too much. It doesn't really help you.
It actually just makes it more technical.
So the
basically.
Game has a second weapon too, doesn't it?
Well, you can punch.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that expands.
I was blanking on what the other weapon was.
But
yeah, it's a garbage baby punch. Yeah.
It is. I mean, and the thing is, I mean, things are moving, like we said, moving a lot faster than you. So punching them typically means that you take some damage as well.
Yeah.
So
I Cybernator, I bet, is the kind of like really technical, complicated action game that. There's a few people who are amazingly good at it, and it's their favorite game. And for most other people, it's a curiosity, but it's not that much fun to play because it's just so hard and it's so difficult to get your head and your hands around it. That's how I've always felt about it.
It's not bad. It's a pretty good game.
Yeah,
but it's
quality, but it's just sort of impenetrable. You know, it's like a 2D Steel Battalion.
Yeah, it's almost like they were trying to
go that far.
They're trying
to
make it unique.
It's way more of an action fast game than that, but still.
I don't have to turn on the windshield wipers.
Yeah, but it's like they were trying to make it unique, so they just layered on a whole bunch of controls that just put up a wall between you and actually playing the game.
Let me say this: if Capcom, actually the same publisher, if Capcom went out to a company and said, "Hey, we want you to make Steel Battalion Zero in the same style as Dark Void Zero." That what they made might kind of come out like Cybernator.
Yeah.
It's stripped down, it's simplified, it's more of an action arcade game, but it still has some of the same vibe and elements to
it. I think you'd end up with something closer to Metal Warrior, which is also a Konami game.
Oh, I never played that one. Is that the gravity switching thing?
No, I mean it's a big stompy mech game. And it's very similar to Cybernator. It just controls a lot more nicely. It's actually developed by LucasArts and published by Konami, which is fucking insane.
Well, it's not that insane. I mean, it's the same deal as Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
But it's even more nuts in that it was only published in one region, and that region is North America. So Konami didn't even bring it home. It's weird. The whole thing is weird.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're into sort of obscure mech shooters from 1993... Cybernators are up your alley, but if you're looking for something that's a bit more penetrable, accessible, then it's probably not for you.
I mean, I enjoy the game. I do. I don't have any reason to buy it again after having played it when I was a kid. And I actually seemed to recall being pretty good at it. yeah. eventually.
But you don't have any nostalgia for it, it sounds like.
No. It was a fun game, but it's not a game that, like, you know, I really want to
play. Right. But I think it's a game today that a lot of people would appreciate having save states for.
Yes. Yeah. I'll definitely use that against the boss. But I'm gonna try it. With locking my gun in place and see if that's any better. The thing is, the boss, the way the second boss works is he's this big sort of mech style gun, but he has asteroids that rotate around him. And the thing is, some of those asteroids have cannons that shoot at you. So you basically have to dodge the normal asteroids, dodge the asteroids with cannons on them, and then dodge the shots that they shoot at you.
Yeah. So that sounds right.
Yeah. And you're in this slow mech that moves really slowly and has a goofy way to shoot at things. So
I'd like to see like expert play in Cybernator, because I bet there are people who've mastered it, and it looks so cool when they play it. But it's like Ikaruga, like there when they play it, it doesn't look anything like when I play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to what James has been playing.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Cybernator, because I hadn't seen John's list, and I actually intended to mention both Cybernator and Metal Warriors, because the first game I'm good. So let me take a step back. So Steam this week had a bunch of Japanese indie games on sale. And in some markets, they actually called it Japanese indie game sale. In other ones, it just kind of happened and they didn't really mention it. There, if you just went to like this week's deals, there'd be a ton of these independent Japanese games. The Japanese indie scene has been around for a really long time, but it's always been kind of a different animal than what we're used to here. I mean, you have older games, you have things like Cave Story, and I'm blanking on the name of the scrolling shooter series. There's 100,000 entries in.
I would say it's made up more of free games, just like, you know, fan-made. I'm not trying to make any money on it. There's no DLC. It's just, I made this thing. It's really cool. Spread the word. Stuff like La Milana, Cave Story, like you said.
Are you thinking of Dodonpachi?
No, I'm thinking of the one that's got all the anime girls. There's like 1,000 of them at this point. And they just, it's like one dude makes everything in the game and he's made like 50 games. I'm trying to remember what they're called.
Oh, wow. Like an idiot savant, maybe.
Well, it's not Castle Shikigami.
No.
No, God, yeah. No, those are sold. You can buy Castle Shikigami 3.
I'm blanking on
Wii.
What it's called, but somebody, people listening will know immediately what I'm talking about. Let's put it that way. And things like Ika-chan, like that, even stuff like that, where they're like one dude made this game, or three guys made this game, something like that. Real small people. Yeah.
So what games did you get?
So the first game I got, I'm gonna get the full name right, because I always refer to it just simply as Gunhound. The first game I got is Armored Hunter Gunhound, which is very, very similar to Cybernator and Metal Warriors.
You cannot get more Japanese a name than that, by the way.
Oh yeah, you could, and Gunhound's all caps.
Yep.
You control
awesome. I'm surprised it's not an acronym.
You control a massive stompy mech that can either shoot a gun at varying angles or lock on with different types of missiles and shoot those out, or just shoot big, huge rockets that just blow up large enemies in one hit. It's incredible. It plays very much like Cybernator and Metal Warriors that John was describing, but without the platforming. In general, you're just walking forward and enemies come and you're trying to take them out. It's incredibly difficult, and I've struggled mightily with some of the game itself. Visually, it looks like a Super Nintendo game, but sharper. A lot of the same kind of sprite work.
I played a game, not a shooter, recently, but I think actually a friend of the show, Chris Johnson from Player One, sent me a copy of it, but it's Volgar the Viking, which is it's a Western Steam game that was published by Adult Swim, but it's also like looks exactly like a Super Nintendo game and is like unbelievably hard and infuriating, but fun, like really high quality, but just... For me, I'm never going to get very far in it. Like, I'd have to watch videos of people that
I would say that Gunhound very much it borrows from the Assault Suit series, of which Cybernator is a member.
Yeah, it was originally Assault Suit Vulcan, I think was what it was called.
There are space modes. I have not gotten that far yet because the game is wrecking my shit.
James, you forgot the best part of the name. It has an EX at the end.
It does. You're right. There is an EX.
It's Armored Hunter Gunhound EX.
That's awesome.
So what's interesting about the game, though, is you're in a squad, and there is, you know, real basic anime-style storytelling going on where the squad's kind of talking to each other. You kind of know what the other members of the squad are doing during a fight. But, I mean, it's real basic. I'm stuck right now in an escort mission. So you're walking through a jungle, and you're trying to keep this boat safe. And I'm doing really well until at some point an enemy comes streaming in from behind and just wrecks everything. At the bottom, you have a map, and it shows radar of where all the enemies are and how close you are to the end. So you can see them coming. But by the time I turn around to do something about it, shit's already hit the fan, and it's all over. So I'm struggling with it. It's still – so I really enjoy it. It looks really nice. It's a fun game.
Yeah, I'm looking at screenshots on a Steam app on my phone right now, and that game – that looks like a really high quality, like Konami or Capcom Super Nintendo game. That's really beautiful.
Yeah, there's some weirdness with the game. It had some trouble with the gamepad that I was playing it with. Eventually, I got it working, but I had to fiddle with it a little bit. Definitely wouldn't want to play this with a keyboard. So it's worth figuring out, but it took some time. But like I said, it is very difficult, and it can be very frustrating. Eventually, I got through. I'm getting through it, but it's taken some doing. I was reticent to really go, you know, all out at it, because the other game I picked up was another mech game that styles itself on a different era of games, Astabreed, which is this 3D gorgeous game where you control a mech and it's various types of shooters. So there's kind of like vertical shooters where you're scrolling, you know, up kind of Ikaruga style. There is horizontal shooting modes where you're scrolling, you know, sideways. And then there are these, like, you're going into the screen kind of like Omega Boost. And Omega Boost is really the best analogy I have for this game, because you control a big, giant, hulkingly powerful mech destroying thousands of enemies on screen with either spray shots, direct shots, a almost invincible sword, or trying to do lock-ons and combining these things, or
jeez,
your superpower weapon. The thing about this game that makes it different than a lot of games that are various styles of shooters is, A, it shifts between the two fairly seamlessly with the background of these giant enemy set pieces, and B, it's got elements of bullet hell games in there.
Right.
So a lot of the bosses have multiple shots they'll just fill the screen with, and some of the shots you can cut up with your sword, some of them you can kind of brush away with your gun, and some of them you just have to avoid. And understanding the difference between them and knowing how to get in and get your hits in and get out is a huge part of the game. It's also a very fast game. There's no pause between stages. It's kind of like an arcade game where you beat clear stage. There's a incredibly stupid anime story video. You hit the next stage. Most of the story is actually given by between you and your mech, which an alien race has kidnapped people and is turning them into part of the collective consciousness through making them integrated into the mech. It's fucking insane bullshit. But they're talking during the mission, and most of the narrative is delivered during combat between your character interacting with his alien mech that is made of human.
Yeah, so you pretty much have to ignore the story in order to survive the game.
Yeah, if you could speak Japanese, then maybe you'd have a chance. But since all the voices in Japanese and text.
That's the best part. English. You have to read the subtitles to actually get any of the story, which is impossible when you're playing the game.
I pieced it together from like quick glances down while I was playing. And then when I finally cleared the game, it unlocked kind of this story. And you could just read the story and make sense of what the fuck is going on.
That's funny.
It's super anime bullshit to the point that I'm enraptured with how silly it is.
But some of the gameplay, I was looking at a video and kind of reminds me of Bangayo, just because you've got this like radius around your ship where you can kind of transform or auto kill all the enemies in that radius.
Yeah. Mm. So what happens is you charge up this gauge, and then you hit a button, whatever button you've mapped to your controller. And depending on what conditions, different special attacks happen. So you can use the control stick to, when you're doing like a direct shot where you're not spread shot, and hold it down, and whatever is directly in front of wherever you've got the control stick pointed, it will lock onto them, and eventually it'll fill up and you can release the button and it'll do this special attack that swarms around the enemy. You could kind of do an aerial one where you hold down the spread shot and a big circle forms around you, and if you charge that up and lock onto people and hit the special button, different things happen. it's really kind of an insane game to watch in action. And as I got good at it, the chaos kind of broke down and I could sort of see what's happening. But that took a lot of doing.
Exciting, though, once you start to get that sense of what's really going on here. I've talked about that with Smash Brothers. I feel the same thing. You have to go through that process of being able to parse out what the hell's happening because it's so chaotic.
The bosses, in some cases, are gigantic. So understanding the big swarm of just fire and enemies and things could be incredibly difficult. The one thing I will say, though, is that the game is about – I bought it for like $10, and I've beaten it twice in 2 hours.
So it's easy, like Omega Boost, right?
No! Like, there is an easy setting, and that is kind of easy. But even the normal setting, things start to get difficult.
You're just amazing at it.
Well, I beat it on easy mode, and then I really struggled on normal mode, and eventually got through.
But in an hour, I mean...
No, I would say I cleared the first one in half an hour, and then in normal mode, it was getting closer to two.
Okay, so it's also, like most shoot 'em ups, extremely short.
Yeah, it's like six missions long.
Okay, but even if you're barely making it by.
It is a score attack game, ultimately. So you could try to up your score, and there's all kinds of weird combo systems to get more score out of it. And I had fun with it. I thought the story was dumb in the most beautiful way it could possibly be dumb. I thought, like, the end video was the dumbest way they could have resolved it, and I was, yes, I'm thrilled with this incredibly stupid cliche ending. And it was, you know, the game itself is frustrating and irritating and just makes you super mad at it because you'll get stuck on a boss. I died on one boss so many times I got an achievement for continuing. I think the achievement was called like never say die or something like that. It's just like, no, I'm gonna continue again. Fuck this game. But eventually I got through it and I had a good time with it. So I'm just really happy with the game. Like I said, there is buyer beware a little bit because it is very short. And you may not want to play it a bunch of times to up your score, but I enjoyed it.
Nice.
And like I said, it looks really good.
And if I could spur on a quick tangent here, have any of you ever played the original Bangayo?
The original Bangayo? I don't think so. I never have.
What console was that on?
Well, it originally came out on N64. Yeah. Only in Japan. Yeah, it was one of the very few like worthy N64 import titles. And then about a year later, I think, Treasure made a sort of almost like a HD version up port of it to Dreamcast. And I think that did come out here, or at least it was much more widely manufactured. And so it's much easier to get a copy of the Dreamcast version. But I've never played either. I never touched it until the DS game, which is a sequel.
Yeah.
I don't even think I played it on Xbox. I forgot that they even
I've heard really good things about it, but I've never played it.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. I always wanted to play the N64 version because I know these might be crazy people, but I think there is kind of a sub fan base of people who prefer the N64 version. And I don't know why. So I'd be interested to learn more about the differences between that and the Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. But I just always thought it looked so cool, and there really weren't very many – you know, like quasi shoot 'em up action games like that for N64. So we really wanted to play it and didn't get a chance to. Anyway, I will finish up new business with a quick follow up with the Mysterious Murasame Castle, which again came out on Virtual Console recently for 3DS. First time in the West, and you know, I as I said before, it is a follow-up to The Legend of Zelda in the same engine from the same team. It's really a pretty different game in the sense that it's pretty shallow, I think. It's pretty basic action game, which is not to say it's bad. I think it's actually pretty good. It's tough, very tough, and I'm ashamed to admit, relying quite a bit on save states, although the game does have quite a few checkpoints as well. There's five castles that you go through in the course of the game, and each one is split into two levels. One is in the field where you're kind of in the outdoor garden areas around the castle. And then when you get to the end of that section, you reach a checkpoint, and the next level is the inside of the castle. So again, if you've ever played Legend of the Mystical Ninja, it's actually kind of similar to that, except, 'cause that game has sort of outside and then you go inside. But in that case, when you go inside, it turns into a 2D side-scrolling action game. And that's not the case here. You still stay overhead, but at least you get a natural checkpoint there. And, you know, I mentioned last week, it's a little, there's a lot of dodging in the game because there's so many enemies, 7-8 enemies on the screen at a time, running around in all different directions, and almost all of them have projectiles that they will shoot you. And what makes it a lot tougher to dodge than it is in Zelda is that those projectiles will travel along diagonals. And so there's just this, it is a not quite bullet hell, but there's a lot of things coming at you that you have to move around. And your movement is still very much cardinal directions like Zelda. So the only way to get through it really is to use your sword to deflect the shuriken and the other projectile. I think some enemies shoot fire or bombs that you cannot deflect, but most of them you can. And like, no, again, knowing the difference, I mean, it's twitchy in that sense, in a way that Zelda certainly isn't. But it's fun. It's a little out of my league, I think, in terms of difficulty, but I'm sort of gradually pushing on through it. It's a neat little curiosity. And I think, you know, if you're really into like these weird NES games that you never got to play, I think it's not a bad game at all. I think it's good. So in that case, it's probably worth checking out.
Here's my question for you. Do you think there's enough there that Nintendo could say, make a 3DS eShop game that builds on its gameplay?
Absolutely. Yes.
Do you think that's part of the strategy of why they've released this game and why they featured it in Smash Brothers and stuff?
I mean, I certainly hope so. Do I? Am I going to make that prediction? No, but it would make a lot of sense if they went that way.
Especially because like they did something in, you know, the Wii U party game. I can't remember what it's called.
Nintendo Land?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They featured it a lot in a very short window of time.
They did, and at that time, I think it was one of those Smash Brothers moments of, hey, we're going to like feature Mach Rider in the Smash Brothers game, and none of you know what the hell that is. But, you know, it could be that the reason it came out finally on Virtual Console over here is just that maybe they said, hey, we need to pick a Virtual Console game to release so these internet trolls and podcast hosts don't make fun of us for never doing that.
But not the panelists. Only Johnny makes fun of Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah, all of us. I refer to all of us as hosts in this case. But anyway, maybe it was the next thing on the list from Japan, and they said, well, it probably won't sell that great because it never came out here in the first place, but we can build it up as a big import treasure, and, you know, we can play up the connection with Nintendo Land. But
how maybe much there's is more game?
To it. Maybe it's what you're asking me is to assess whether I think Nintendo is clever enough to like build this into a marketing campaign, or is this just like the next game that they have available?
My primary question was, is there a viable path to making a game inspired by this?
Yes. And, I mean, in terms of the setting and the style and the gameplay, the core game design, yes. I think you could improved new game of this.
And you followed around the company enough to know that this is a lot of things happening in relatively short proximity. Do you think this is crazy coincidence?
It's unusual. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how conspiratorial I want to look into Nintendo, because lately sometimes I wonder how smart they really are about things like that. But maybe they're getting better.
The game did come out in Europe in like May. So I don't know. Like the timing, I'm not sure we can look too closely at it.
Well, didn't you mention last week that it also just came out on Wii U in Japan?
Yeah.
So they're releasing it in a lot of regions all around the same time. That is odd. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe someone just liked this game and it was on their list to include in something as like some sort of troll.
Yeah. But I do think a new one of these would be cool, you know, with much better graphics and a little more nuance to the game design, maybe a little more forgiving in terms of your character's speed and mobility. I think that would go a long way to making it feel more accessible and more enjoyable. But I mean, even the classic is it's kind of got that hardcore old Nintendo vibe, you know, but it is fun and it's well made. So I would recommend that you check it out if you're on the more curious end, maybe of Virtual Console connoisseurs. And the other thing I can talk about, I don't want to go too deep into this, but I went down the rabbit hole of Final Fantasy 14 over the weekend.
Oh, boy.
Yeah!
Don't do that.
Not that. Now, John would laugh at me if he saw how far I am, because when I sit down the rabbit hole, that makes it sound like I got really serious about it. I mean, I probably put in 5 or 6 hours. So that's a lot for me for any game to play one game over the weekend that much. But in MMO scale, I don't think it's very much. And I'm only level 11 now with my first job. So, like, I'm scooting around and exploring a little bit, but it's still, I feel that I've seen only a very small sliver of the world that I'm in.
Well, yeah, I mean, usually by about level 10, about, you know, I don't know, 10 hours in or so, it's kind of where you've sort of got your feet under you in the game. So, you know, you've been introduced to all the first stuff.
The major basic mechanics, I think I've got, I have a basic understanding of how to do them. But it took a few hours to even feel comfortable reading the map or controlling the menus because there's so many on top of each other. I mean, the interface is a nightmare. I can't express enough how overwhelming and confusing and annoying the user interface is in this game. And the scary thing is that you've made reference to the fact that this may be one of the better ones.
Well, it's certainly it's probably cleaner. The thing is with the interface, though, is that at any one time, you maybe only use like a quarter of the stuff that's on the screen. It's not like you're looking at, you know, it's like when you drive a car. Do you use half the stuff that's, you know, that could use?
But
no.
But that stuff isn't on a heads-up display overlaid over the world that I'm trying to look at.
I never use the steering wheel.
Yeah, but I mean...
That stuff is on essentially a second screen that I look down at when I need to know what speed I'm driving. But the problem in FF14 is that, like, half the screen is covered in numbers and, like, crazy little symbols and things that I barely understand what they do.
Well, I mean, you still have, you know, hit points, magic points. I mean, all that kind of stuff is there. There's just, you know, you just the way the skills are laid out, you know, you have those and, you know, you kind of have to get those set up the way you like. And
well, and you have a mini map that you can display and also a compass. And those are very customizable. Like you can scroll around on them and zoom in and zoom out and recenter the map onto your character's location and, you know, make different kinds of icons display on there. It's just. I mean, I'm not complaining about a level of customization that's offered for advanced users. I'm sure a lot of people really know how to set things up exactly the way they want. I'm struggling to do that because there's so many options. There's so many features all the time. And the game, maybe this is typical of MMOs, I don't know. This is the first one I've ever played, and I feel... I feel like I'm just getting into the deep end of the pool without really having my floaties on here because it's very overwhelming for me, even as a pretty seasoned JRPG player. You know, I was really surprised at just how difficult it was for me to get started. But I am ramping up now and I'm feeling more comfortable. I mean, there's still a bunch of stuff there that I don't know what it does, but at least I know, like, sort of the things that seem most important to me right now in where I am in the game. Like I know how to find the next quest. I know how to initiate basic combat.
Yep.
I finally figured out how to use potions like after 5 or 6 hours of the game. I know how to equip new equipment when I get it.
Yep.
So I'm getting the basics down, but it's a very deep game, or at least it's very dense and there's a lot of stuff to fiddle with, which I found a little scary right off the bat. And the game doesn't do a great job of explaining what all that stuff is.
Yeah, no MMO really does. But they, but 14 does one of the better jobs that I've seen. They actually take the time to do it.
Yeah, that's mortifying because I would say they skipped over a whole lot of stuff.
Well, but the one thing I will say is that, I mean, you can go online and find ridiculous amounts of information about any MMO, right? That's partially, I think, why they don't put the tutorial stuff in there is because communities, like rabid communities, grow around these games, right?
Yeah, but that's just being a dick. I mean, that's just saying, fuck it, I don't want to bother to write documentation. They'll figure it out.
That's Minecraft does the same thing, you know? It's like the game is so impenetrable. And Dark Souls, you know, it's like there's not really enough information in this game for you to understand how to play it.
Yeah.
And the only way is for you to go and just read
it. I mean, John, you say Crime Warp.
In this day and age.
But your job, you would send that shit back to the developer and say, no, document this. This is fucking stupid.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, it really depends. Like, that's the thing. I mean, I go into MMOs. I mean, and I haven't been playing MMOs for that long. I started playing MMOs in, like, maybe 2008. So, like, I mean, they've been around for a lot longer than that. And
well, true, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's just you kind of have to – it's all about focusing on stuff. You know, it's like don't think you have to learn everything at once. Just take things kind of one step at a time, right? Like focus on one character class, doing one thing well. I think it's good. It could just do one thing well. That's it.
Yeah.
Everything else is gravy. So
that sounds like really good advice to me, because that is sort of how I've kept my head in the game so far, is I try to keep things simple. I try not to take on 18 quests at a time.
Yeah.
Because then I can't find any of them. You know, I try to really focus on the immediate thing at hand. And then by doing that, my character will grow. And little by little, I'm trying to slow down the intake of new information, because it's such a fire hose in the beginning that I kind of pushed through it almost in spite. I was live streaming on PS4 and I'm just like, can you believe this shit?
Yeah, I know.
It was so difficult for me to get into. But
yeah.
I'm feeling better about it now. I'm definitely going to keep
playing. And what's the deal with airline food?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, exactly. I could easily explain a lot of this stuff to you. But the thing is, what class are you?
I'm a gladiator. Well, I want the character I want to make on your server.
Don't be one of those. Be something else. Be something that's
You already fucked up.
No, you didn't fuck up, but the thing is you're gonna be put in a tanking role, which will require you to know more about the instances than you are probably prepared to actually do. In other words, you're gonna be thrust into a leadership role that you are probably not used to. Like, you know what I'm saying? In other words, people are gonna rely on you to explain shit to them, and you're probably not there yet. In fact, I can tell you that you're not.
This gets into some server bullshit that I wasn't planning on getting into right now. But the character that I've played several hours of so far, and I've leveled up past level 10, where a lot of the world kind of broadens out quite a bit when you reach that milestone, is not what I intend to be my main character. He was my test character while I waited for your server, John, to open up and allow me to make one on there. And that has yet to happen in a window that I've been able to catch it. I think a couple times a week, maybe there's a little window where you can jump in there and make a character on the Hyperion server, which is what I eventually would like to do, so you and I can play together.
Yep.
But that hasn't happened, because that apparently is a very popular old server. It's a legacy server, whatever that means. But anyway,
that's one of the servers that launched with the game when it was 1.0 that crashed and burned.
Oh God!
But they retained all the user accounts on that. So it has all of the old. It has all of the people that originally started playing the game right from 1.0.
Who all quit?
Basically. Sure. Yeah.
So.
Except John. Well, I mean, not that you're playing it currently, but I mean, you were one of those, right?
No.
Well, how did you get onto it? You just got lucky?
No, I mean, I waited. I mean, I got on for the reboot for 2.0, and I waited around until that server came open.
Okay, well, that's what I continue to try
John,
to do.
John, you avoided 1.0 because you saw the fire.
It was a mess.
Yeah, I mean,
that game was a mess. And frankly, I wasn't into Final Fantasy XI either.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't have to follow MMOs.
I didn't care about
that game was a fire.
Yeah, it was.
Well, so far, I'll say. I mean, you know, A Realm Reborn, the 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what it was like before this, but as overly complicated as it seems to me as a neophyte into the genre, this seems very competent. It's polished. It runs well. Mm-hmm. They've clearly put a lot of thought into the controller setup for PS4, even though it is still super complicated. But I mean, it's customized very much. The interface and the controls are very much customized for PS4, and they give you tons and tons of options to remap it to however you want. So finding all that stuff is a different matter, but you know they seem to have done a nice job with it. So I don't think anybody should be concerned about jumping into it just on pure quality. I know that was a huge concern.
Oh, it is a much better game.
But I think it's pretty much entirely new people working on it at this point. I think they pretty much fired or moved away most of the people who were involved with it the first time around, and they brought in a SWAT team to like really clean it up and make it run properly.
Yeah, I mean they dumped the old game director and brought in a totally new guy.
And you know what? Props to them. Like that kind of thing happens in the movie industry quite a bit. You know, when a project isn't going well, I mean, it's always before we ever see it, but it could have been in work for years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when someone storms out or they get fired for incompetency or whatever,
or they set the bathroom on fire.
Well, they bring in substitute directors all the time in the movie industry, but in games, we don't really hear about that.
Yeah.
And especially in this case, when it was so public and embarrassing, I'm sure, for Square Enix, that they brought in someone who was able to turn the ship around and actually make it a good game and fairly popular and well received, I think has really earned them a tremendous amount of goodwill from their fan base, at least the weird subset of the Square Enix fan base that's into these MMOs that they make.
Yeah.
And I admire them a lot for saying, you know what, it would be way easier to just cancel FF14 and refund people's money and say, well, that was a huge mistake and we'll never do it again. But instead they corrected it, you know,
yep.
And I'm sure at great expense and tremendous personal effort, they turned it around and it seems to be really
it's
well
the danger,
made.
It, yeah. It is the danger of when you have a name that is so intricately linked with what your company is, like Final Fantasy.
And it shows that they really give a shit about the Final Fantasy series and what and how it's perceived by gamers.
If you fuck it up, you have to make it right, no matter how much it costs, because that name is worth more than the amount of money you will lose otherwise.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that's a really good reading of it. So anyway, that's enough of FF14 for this week. We are now going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got your listener mail.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First this week, we have a feature, Amiibo. The currently lackluster implementation of Nintendo's NFC figures by Justin Berube.
Another feel-good article on our website.
Yeah. Everything is terrible. I hate it. Are you anxiously awaiting the release of Nintendo's Skylander completely original set of figurines? Good! Because Justin is here to tell you how much they suck. Check out his article and have your flames at the ready.
Next up, we have a review for Buta Metal on the Wii U by Danny Bivens. Danny takes a look at this Japanese release on the Wii U eShop. While the goal of the game is to fling medals, it's really about flinging cash into Nintendo's bank account via NFC cards. Is this game sizzling, or is it a pig with lipstick? Find out with his review.
Buta actually means pig, so it's actually pig metal. I probably should have put that in there, but
it's a piggy bank game in which Nintendo gets to break it and keep all the money inside.
Yes. All right, and next up we have a review of X-Type Plus for Wii U by Don Koopman. If you're interested in what types of games are being made with Nintendo's web framework, X-Type Plus may be for you. Behold, HTML5 in all its glory, and let Don give you his final verdict.
And finally, we have a preview of Fossil Fighters. Wow, they still make those. Fossil Fighters Frontier for 3DS by Justin Berube. Justin got some hands-on time with a game that Nintendo only showed to children at E3. Games? For children? Pure madness! Justin tells us if it's worth your adult time chasing down fossils and whatnot.
I will say that they actually explicitly refused to let us see that game.
Oh, we asked. Yeah, we tried.
Yeah.
And they said, no, only the kids can play it. They had a special kids thing at NOA. It was weird.
It felt like I've never been scooped by a 5-year-old, but apparently I have now. Thanks,
we should have interviewed the kids to get our coverage.
We've been scooped by 5-year-olds, a.k.a. Polygon.
James, we are the fossils. That's the metaphor of the game.
Sick burn.
Those children are fighting us.
All right. Well, of course, you can go check out all of that, as well as actually a whole lot of the impressions and videos from Gamescom that Don Koopman has been taking. So for a summer week, there's actually a fair bit of interesting material, and you can find it all over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone. It is time for listener mail, and as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I believe Guillaume is up first.
I am. Brad writes, "So I find myself buying way more games than I can ever hope to play and really enjoy. Does that make me a collector or someone who's just averse to having money? How large is your gaming backlog?"
Oh, no.
Second, am I a bad person because I like Zelda Link Between Worlds but don't love it? I have to say, I could play a game like Fire Emblem Awakening forever, but was pretty quick to move on beyond Zelda once I finished once through.
How do we want to tackle these?
Well, on Zelda, I'd like to make the quick point that Fire Emblem Awakening is a much longer game in the first place. Mm-hmm. And to me, Zelda games typically are not games that you would replay immediately after finishing them, but you go back to them a couple years later and sort of experience it through new eyes. And that's the replay value in Zelda games. It's much more long-term than something like Fire Emblem, I think. Which Fire Emblem had DLC packs and a whole bunch of stuff like that, too.
It's also a better game.
Well, I couldn't get into it at all.
I know that you like it more, James, but I'm just saying it's really apples and oranges in that case.
But I could see that, like, how there might be more ways to play through Fire Emblem than
Zelda. Oh, there's definitely more ways to play to Fire Emblem.
Especially since you can marry your characters together and you can have
different... you can experiment with strategies and things.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
They're in terms of depth, there's way more there.
There's lots of permutations, but it's a strategy game. I mean, you expect it to be deep. You play strategy games because usually you want a very deep experience like that. I'm sure SteamWorld Dig will be the same way. Not SteamWorld Dig.
Codename Steam.
Codename Steam.
Right. Sorry. And Zelda, unless you're a sequence breaker or something like that, yeah, there's not much to do there. Like, even if you do the dungeons a different order, it's still going to be kind of the same overall outcome. Like, you're going to grab all the doodads that you can find and you're going to finish the game. Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this when the game came out. I personally feel it's one of the weaker Zelda games. And I think that's part of it is because ultimately the dungeons have no impact on one another. There's no, I've taken the stuff I learned to this dungeon. It's kind of, they're all sort of just there. You do them and do what you need to do.
They're not cumulative like they have been in for most of the recent
Zelda games. Your experience isn't cumulative either. So it's kind of like, well, all right, I'm just going to do things and move through them.
Yeah, they're a bunch of one-offs.
So and you think the bosses are super easy, right?
Oh, the bosses are jokes.
Yeah, most of the bosses are jokes, aside from maybe one or two.
So, I mean, I can see walking away from that game going, eh. I don't think A Link Between Worlds is a bad game. I think it feels like a game someone would make if they said, we should make a Zelda game, and they weren't Nintendo.
Interesting, because Capcom did that a few times with a lot of
and did a much better job.
Oh, I disagree so much.
No, Minish Cap is a better game. Shut your mouth.
that I agree with. I actually do agree with James on this. I think Minish Cap is a better game.
We're evenly divided on that comparison, although I do like both.
Minish Cap is okay.
I liked Link Between Worlds. I didn't love it. I thought it was good. I thought it was solid. I enjoyed it a lot, but...
I think it's super inventive.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, for me, I don't know if... When I first played it, I was like, this is amazing. By the end, I was like... Meh, I can see that. I can see the chinks in the armor.
Sure, but I mean, there are things everyone likes about it, I think, like the soundtrack. You know,
I think visually that's a much better game than even Link Between Worlds. Now, I think visually, a Minish Cap is gorgeous.
That's a great game. About Minish Cap, okay.
About the collecting, just how bad is the backlog situation for each of us?
I don't know. I stopped. To keeping track. What's a backlog, really? What is anything?
I mean, there's no logs in your apartment. We've been there.
No, I mean, you know, I have a couple games. I have systems. I mean, if you want to talk about a backlog, I mean, I was thinking about the consoles that I have in this apartment right now. Now, bear in mind, at my mom's place is my NES and my Super NES, right? In this apartment right now, I have... I'm going to get robbed for this, I know it, but...
Let's talk in general. So, John, in your apartment,
I have a lot of stuff.
In Atlanta.
Yeah. I have a lot of stuff. Let's just
throw them off the trail, James.
Yeah.
No, I've got a lot of games, and partially one of the reasons why I don't have a Vita or a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One is not just because I'm a raging Nintendo fanboy, but also because I'm trying to keep the backlog under control. I'm already buying too many freaking games for the consoles that I own, for the consoles like the Wii U that supposedly doesn't get any support. So I can't imagine, you know, having the pressure to try to keep up with all the freaking releases. I prefer not to subject myself to that.
It's rough, and John and I are much worse than you guys about collecting consoles, like having just a lot of different platforms. And
yeah,
not necessarily having a ton of games for all of them, but because we have so many, you know, and I try to play some PC games as well sometimes, and I know James does too, but it's tough, you know, with, you have all these handhelds, I mean, you have a Vita also. I mean, I'll say that generally on console and handhelds both, I don't buy games that I don't play at least a little bit. Sometimes I kind of sample them. If it's a virtual console thing and it's $5, I might play it one time and say, oh, that's not nearly as good as I remember. And I might never play it again. And that's fine. But I don't buy games for systems that I don't play at all.
Yeah, I used to do that.
Now,
I
get a bunch of shit on PlayStation Plus that I never play, but I didn't really buy those. I mean, I may have had very little interest in them in the first place, and maybe I downloaded it just in case.
Right.
But if I don't ever play that, whatever. I don't feel any regret about that whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from my standpoint, my strategy on buying games is to go much deeper into the console library. To get into those really weird places where these games come out and people go, what the fuck is that? Because that's sort of where I like to operate. I like to see these games that are real out there and crazy. So, but that means that when I go looking for games, I'm either there looking to buy something real nuts and I'm like, all right, I'm going to find something off the shelf and just grab it. I'm going to go. And that's kind of an I need something to play right now moment, or I've got a list I'm sort of curating in my head of games I haven't bought yet that I want to play. So I just go out and get them when I need them.
Yeah, and you're a bit of a collector as well. I mean, you're purposeful in the games that you choose to acquire.
I mean, I actually have all of my games that I need to play sitting in my entertainment center, whereas once I've played them, they go onto the shelf.
Okay, so you do have a system where you know that you have a queue, basically, like a Netflix queue of these are the next five games I'm going to play.
Yeah, and I can tell you right now that queue is six games deep. Mm-hmm. And some of them are GameCube games I bought online a year ago that I bought them as a curiosity. Like, all right, I don't think I talk about it on the show this week. Let's fucking talk about Auto Modelista, which I actually talked about on the show already.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's sort of how that ended up. But a lot of them are, you know, there's like a 3DS game, Code of Princess. I bought that when it was on sale. I haven't gotten to it yet because it's kind of a, this is on hold until I need something to talk about.
Well, I was just going to say that kind of as a reaction to my backlog, there are certain genres that I've pretty much sworn off completely, such as sports games. I don't even bother with them anymore because I'm never going to have the time to actually sit there and go through an entire, like take a team and do the whole season franchise thing. It's just not going to happen. Right. I made peace with that a long time ago. Yeah. So I love sports games,
MMOs are the same way.
Right? Yeah. Well,
it's like I'm experimenting very, well, I'm experimenting very intentionally, and this may very well be the only MMO I ever play unless Dragon Quest X comes out here, you know, but like, it was a academic curiosity. I've never played an MMO. They've come a long way. I'm really curious to see, like, coming into it now with zero experience and they were on, like, generation 5 of MMOs or whatever. Mm-hmm. What is that like? And you heard it.
But, well, see with that, me,
that's
with
why
me,
I'm
it's,
doing
it's
it. It's not
because
I want to get into MMOs and I want that to be my new jam.
And to that end, Johnny, I would encourage you to go consume some of Sony Online Entertainment's 7 hours of keynotes about their MMOs tomorrow.
That are all terrible. But that's the thing with me. It's in the same vein. Stuff like Mass Effect, Skyrim, those kind of things. Yeah. I don't even bother anymore. Mm. I will never have enough time to actually play through those things.
And yet, you're playing Xenoblade, which I played more than Skyrim, and I beat both.
Yeah, Xenoblade's
a fucking long game.
It's a long ass game, but it's kind of more. I feel like it's more in my wheelhouse than Skyrim or Mass Effect or something
like
that.
Well, sure,
you know what I mean.
That could very well be the case.
So for me, I might play one game like that. I mean, I played all the Mass Effect games, and my feelings on them I've documented.
Yeah, although those are relatively short. I mean, they really probably don't belong in the same conversation.
Yeah, James, you've got the insane ability to me to just power through long games, and I don't know how you do it. How do you do it?
You got stamina, man. I gotta give you credit.
His ass is made of metal.
I have a really nice chair, but no, I mean, ultimately, I look for these games that are like nothing I've played before. So like when I got Yakuza 4, I hadn't played a Yakuza game before, and I knew those games were dumb, nuts, bonkers. So I just got through it. And said, this is, I mean, is this game great? No, but this is an experience I'm having. So let's keep going.
And you beat Yakuza 4?
I got to the last chapter and then got stuck.
Jeez, so that's a game I might also want to play out of pure curiosity, but for me, it would be more like I'll play 2 hours of it, and then I'll feel like I know enough about it to talk about it on the show, and then thank God I never have to play that again.
See, and to me, it's just, I want to keep having this experience because I want to see more of how nuts this is. Right. So there is a feat. So when I play games, I look for games that are going to give me that feedback loop of this is really cool or this is really stupid and stuff like that where I want to keep going. And I try to avoid games like the Elder Scrolls games where, yeah, they're good. I enjoy that they're good, and but they don't give me the constant dopamine hit of something that's really insane or really dumb or really funny that keeps me moving forward.
And they are more of a grind, you know. Yeah. You have to put a lot of time into them to really get to the cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brad asks, you know, am I a collector? Like, what's going on? I think it might be different stuff. Like, for instance, I used to collect DVDs, and I've stopped since, well, DVDs aren't really a thing anymore. But
phrase sounds like something out of a like early 2000s Law and Order episode.
But yeah, like I used to just enjoy having those movies or those TV shows around. Like usually it would be stuff that I couldn't get my hands on otherwise. And also I was happy to be able to just let people borrow them or, you know, talk about my collection to people. So
and this was pre-Netflix, right, probably, right?
Right.
Pre-Amazon Prime, etc.
There is that aspect to collecting that's fun. Like it's more than just owning a lot of crap, you know. It's also kind of having an experience around it, like being able to discuss those games with people, or I don't know, it's more than just like buying a new TV, let's say, or new,
yeah,
it's more than just spending.
One of my particular joys is when I'm talking to somebody and I've got some real niche ass game they've never heard of, and I hand it to them and say, go play this and come back, we're gonna talk when you're done.
it's enjoyable to kind of be like an expert on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
hey man, listen to this song. It'll change your life.
Right. I've got a friend who is just started the Ace Attorney series, and I'm like, oh, we need to talk.
Yeah. It's like when you really like something, you know, it's fun to kind of dig into it. And then if somebody asks you a question about it, you have all kinds of stuff that you can draw from to share with them. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
And not just trivia, but like deep, like long held opinions. And like, you've really put a lot of thought into it. And
right. Although in this
case, that's where good conversation comes
yeah.
from.
Yeah. Although in this case, he seems to enjoy just owning the game. That's also fine. I mean, there can be fun. Yeah. There can be fun in the hunt to find something rare or something that you've been looking for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the episode where I talked about the Beautiful Joe DS game, I kind of touch on that a little bit. I bought that game because I made the terrifying observation that half of my DS collection, or half minus one, were Capcom games. And I'm like, well,
let's see
how this whole nightmare started and get their first DS game.
Right.
And it's awful. And I could sell it and make my money back, but I want to have it there because it sort of completes the narrative of Capcom's span on that system.
Mm-hmm. But if Brad is looking for ways to stop spending, because it does also, like, I'm not sure if his letter is a cry for help or what.
Yeah, we should talk intervention strategy, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah. My trick, like, I used to buy, like, whenever there's digital sales or stuff like that, I used to buy way too many games for what I was able to play. I don't have the free time to go through all my games. So.
Oh, yeah, turn off your internet during Steam sales.
Oh, yeah, so I've done that. But also, like, ask yourself, okay, I've got this game in front of me. Am I going to play it right now? Am I going to play it as soon as I buy it? And if the answer is no, don't buy it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say exactly the same thing. It sounds so simple, but it's self restraint, right? Because I kind of had a period probably about 2007 or so. I was buying like two or three games a month.
John. We talked about it on the show.
Yeah, that was when you ended up with the cat helmet.
Yeah, and actually, I don't even regret buying the cat helmet, but I regret, like, there's stuff like I've told
saved
you guys
your cat's life
several times from the flood, especially. I think last year sometime I put in Mass Effect, and I bought that game. I had it like pre-ordered, bought it when it came out, Mm-hmm. And my save file, I had 2 hours on it.
Yeah, I remember this.
I do too, yeah.
And I still haven't beaten it. I was like, why did I even buy this? It was so stupid.
Didn't you rebuy one of the Elder Scrolls games so you could play it on a more convenient platform than the one you
Yeah, and I still haven't beat it. Elder Scrolls is kind of where, that was where I said, all right,
that
this
was
is
where
just,
the dream goes God. To die.
This is stupid. Yeah. I did have kind of a point. I did have
that
a
was the
point.
Bad trip that made you quit yeah. junk.
I will say that the challenge to Guillaume's strategy is when I'm standing in front of a game that I don't know I'm going to be able to get again. So Deception 4, which is sitting on the shelf right now. At some point on this show, I'm going to talk about Deception 4.
Yeah, if you're dealing in antiquities markets, then maybe yeah. that's the case.
But if yeah. if you're not looking to collect, then Deception 4 is always going to be available because you can download it. That's the thing. Right. There's no more rare games.
That's easy mode. That's easy mode.
No, I operate in easy mode.
Like that's the thing. Like you have to realize that no game is ever going to be rare again unless it's some stupid edition, and then you don't want to get that because they're just traps.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay if Stadium Event stays rare because that game sucks and I don't need to play it.
Sure.
And I don't care how much it costs. But yeah, you're right. I mean, going forward, rarity in video games is just probably not going to exist anymore. Not in the sense of the actual software. I mean, there will always be physical items that may be rare, tchotchke, even promo stuff. But in terms of if you just want to play the game, you can probably get it and for not that much money. And that's partly why, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, backlogs weren't a thing. You know, I even had friends who had a lot of money and they owned way games. Like, and I would remember going over there. And I remember once I was at a friend's house and her family was pretty wealthy. And we were digging around to looking for what game we wanted to play because she had a lot. Her parents bought them a lot of NES games and they just had a huge selection. And I was like looking for things I'd never tried before because I'm like, man, this is cool. There's such a great variety. And we found in the pile of NES games, they had a copy of Kickle Cubicle still in the wrapper. And she had no idea where it came from. Like, didn't even remember getting it. And I was like, well, can we unwrap it? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. We ended up playing it for like hours. And I really liked that game. And they let me borrow it. And I played it a whole bunch. And, you know, that stuff is fun. But nowadays, just, you know, backlogs are so easy to develop because games have become ubiquitous and cheap. Mm-hmm. And
longer.
They live in the cloud and you can download them whenever you're ready to play them. And so you think, maybe I'll get around to it one day. It doesn't hurt. Doesn't even take up space on my system to queue that up.
That's an IRM game, right?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. It's a great game.
It's like a maze.
It's kind of like Lolo.
As much money as you think that you're saving during a Steam sale, you save way more when you don't actually buy anything. So
that's
just
absolutely true.
Yeah, just go play the stuff that you have and don't stress it out too much. But yeah, like for your next purchase, just ask yourself, am I going to play this now? And if not, just put it aside.
Well, I'll say this about Steam sales is part of the mania of Steam sales, and I was part of it, is that a lot of us got into PC gaming around the same time because all of a sudden way more games were being released on PC and the versions were good and the controller support was becoming much more widespread and people were getting computers that could actually run games. Mm-hmm. And so there was a period a couple years ago where all of a sudden it seemed like everybody was playing PC. Part of it was that the console generation was getting a little long in the tooth, right? But so when the Steam sales happened at the same time, people were just like, all you can eat buffets. I mean, it's like, I just bought 80 games in this Steam sale. I'm afraid I will never play 3/4 of them. But as time has gone on, I found it in myself, and I know I've heard a lot of other people say the same thing. It feels like when a new sale happens, we already own 99% of the games that we might want that are on sale.
And have you played them?
No, but sometimes the fact that they go on sale reminds me that I own it and that I need to go play it, and I do.
That was part of that was part of the appeal of the Japanese indie game sale they had going on, because a lot of these games I hadn't played, and maybe they hadn't been featured that prominently. So seeing them out, it's like, oh, that's really cool. But to act as a counterpoint to Guillaume's point, hey, Brad, they're running Steam sales every week now.
It's like humble, humble bundles are every week now.
It's so easy. Just click the button, Brad. Just click the button.
Mm-hmm. So if there are sales every week, just 1 week that you don't have anything to play.
But they only sell there. 40 games.
And you know, Good Old Games just, or I think they're in the process of launching their own version of Steam, except it's all DRM free.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And that's really interesting. And that's, I mean, Good Old Games, they specialize in classic PC games, but they also have modern stuff, and they're going to have their own sales on stuff.
Origin will let you buy a subscription that's $5 and you get 4 games.
Here's what it comes down to.
Not helping anymore.
Yeah, no, we aren't, are we?
Hmm. Brad, you know, there's a bin at GameStop right now with all of their PS3 and 360 used games in it. They're like $3 a piece.
CheapAssGamer.com.
Let me throw down a thesis statement here. Games are cheaper than they have ever been in history, especially if you have a PC. But even if you don't, even on consoles,
games, in general,
you can get more games for less money than ever possible, especially when you factor in stuff like inflation, okay? So that combined with the fact that you have a lot of gamers, like maybe the baby boomer generation equivalent of gamers reaching adulthood and getting into their 20s and 30s now, who have lots of disposable income and they grew up with video games their entire lives, and they know all these different systems, and they're curious and they're engaged with this stuff. You have a lot of people who now are buying way more games than they have time to play because they're adults, but also because they're cheap and they can afford them. And so that's why this is becoming more common, and you hear people talk about it all the time, and it's affected us as well. And what it means is that money is, as for a lot of us, no longer a barrier to getting the video games that we want to play, and now time is the main thing. And that just means it's more incumbent upon you to have a little bit of willpower. And the advice that Guillaume gave earlier is excellent. Don't buy a game unless you're going to play it basically right away. And if not, it'll still be there. That's the great thing, is because of these digital marketplaces, it's not going anywhere. So you don't have to be in a rush to buy it. You should be in a rush to play it, or at least play what you want to play and buy it when you need to buy it in order to play it, but not just because it's a dollar on Steam. If it's been a dollar on Steam, it'll probably be a dollar on Steam again the next holiday that comes around.
Yeah, so because you can wait. If you pay $20 for a game, even if it's a deal, if you never play that game, it's not a value. Play games that you will get value out of.
Right. Again, to another counterpoint, you don't need to sleep.
Yeah.
Stay up and play games.
Also, Best Buy will match Amazon.
They will.
give it a shot. Just try it.
Well, the thing is, I can't always put my own advice in practice, but I try. Like, there's so many freaking endless sales right now, like on both the 3DS and PSN, and I'm just like, well, you already have the past Atlus games that you got for PSP on a sale like 4 years ago, so maybe, you know, maybe don't buy them.
I feel like Code of Princess is on sale every week.
Yeah, I so think you're it's just out. Perpetually on sale. Anyway, do as we say, not as we do. John is the last email this week.
All right, this one, KSO writes, so we got a Pokemon crossover with Nobunaga's Ambition. We will be getting Zelda characters in Dynasty Warriors. What are the chances that we will get Romance of the Mushroom Kingdom?
Fuck you!
That sounds awesome.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms is a pile of excrement.
Right, you spoke highly of it recently, I thought.
No, he was like, this is super confusing.
This is fucking unplayable. Well, I sent some dude horses. I don't know. I guess, sure. It's, you talk about games explain themselves. This game, just no, fuck you. No.
I thought you had a kind of like a, you know, begrudging respect for it. Maybe I
respect
that
they got people to pay money for this fucking thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ko Shibusawa, go to hell.
So maybe maybe putting it in the Mushroom Kingdom would be an improvement.
Yeah, well, maybe they're going to do Uncharted the Waters, but a Wind Waker version before then. I don't know.
How about Zelda Cross ActRaiser, where you still play as the angel, but then when the spirit goes down into the statue, it's a statue of Link holding the Master Sword. Ba-doom.
I'm just fuck you guys. Have your
I had
have
to
your
kill fuck, him that one.
Have well, your yeah. fucking Star Fox Arabase and get the hell out.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Just make something in the executive series, please.
Yeah, the executive. Yeah, make your game about your VCR sales company. Fuck you. Tecmo, you're the worst. worst company ever. Or Koei, excuse me.
Jesus Sega Christ. Gaga is a game that Sega made about how to save Sega.
Oh.
And it didn't work.
Nope. Yeah, if you've never read up on the executive series of Koei games,
just check it out. You might learn something.
Stay that way. Stay ignorant of the fact they made a game about called Top Company where you run a VCR company and sell VCRs in Japan.
No need for Wharton Business School anymore.
Yeah,
Koei's got your back.
Wharton. This is the Wharton of video games.
It is.
James, your wet dream crossover game is coming out in a couple of weeks with Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright. It's finally coming out here.
That game, I had a weird thought of. That game has been so long, like, waiting that it's almost kind of past the point of, like, I'm aware of it. It's almost like, oh, shit, that's coming out, isn't it? Oh, my God.
But you're going to beat it on the first night that it comes out, right?
No, because it's long as hell.
Well, okay.
It's super.
So it'll take you 3 nights.
That's what I was going to say. It'll take you 3 days.
By the time we record, you'll have already beaten it. I can promise.
I've got a wedding that weekend, so I might get held up a little bit.
So you might not make it.
You mean
the
you'll
wedding.
Do it right before the wedding.
That's true. I may just skip the wedding.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's priorities.
In terms of crossover, I mean, we've seen some of this in the past, obviously, with Nintendo stuff, and obviously Nintendo and Tecmo Koei have established a very, very tight working relationship lately. You have things like they own the Spirit Camera license, right? Or they owned it.
I don't know about that. But they did do the Ninja Gaiden 3 thing for the launch of Wii U. That was a big deal. And the Nobunaga's Ambition thing might be the king of them all, I think. Because Zelda and Dynasty Warriors kind of make sense. You know, like they're
in
not
a weird way. Yeah.
They're not the same kind of game. But like if you glance at Hyrule Warriors running on a TV, you might think it looks like a Zelda game. Whereas Pokemon and Nobunaga's Ambition,
that was meant. Yeah, and yes, it was Fatal Frame.
Where did that come from? I mean, that's just a completely unexpected and bizarre mashup of games.
Yeah, so Nintendo bought the Fatal Frame franchise off Tecmo Koei just very recently.
Oh, that's how that worked. Okay.
But there does seem to be an established working relationship there, probably because Tecmo Koei's wares are not welcome. Please stay away.
Well, and
I'm not going to say they make bad games, but
yeah, I'm not a fan of the company. But you know, we can laugh about all those stupid combinations that are possible. But like, I feel like Smash Brothers fills in Nintendo's obligation to making ridiculous crossovers.
Yeah, but I mean,
they do it pretty much better than anybody else.
I, at this point, I would say Smash Brothers is a game. It is a genre of itself.
It is a franchise, that's for sure.
And that the characters that exist in it are members of the franchise. They're almost, it's almost superseded being a crossover.
Sure, but I mean, like Mega Man, you're not going to see it in all of them. Like, this is a new one. Like, I mean, the next
Smash
Brothers.
Well, I mean,
Smash
Mega
Brothers
Man's the only thing coming out on the Wii U eShop right now. So, I mean, at this point, who knows?
I mean, at this point, Smash Brothers, I agree with you, James, in the sense that, you know, obviously all of the characters you can play as in Smash Brothers existed outside of Smash Brothers first. But enough of them have essentially been abandoned in their own series that they now live in Smash Brothers and that it is now their home. And in that sense, it's almost like those are Smash Brothers characters now more than they are, you know, F-Zero characters or whatever. That I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's interesting. But I mean, nevertheless, obviously Smash Brothers is kind of the ultimate crossover game franchise. And again, it's easy to forget that because it's kind of its own thing and its own entity, but it is completely insane. It's just like that thing they showed at E3 with Pac-Man and Mega Man and Sonic and Mario all standing together. The fact that you can play those four characters against each other in one game is just unbelievable. It's so awesome. So if you're into crossovers, obviously I don't have to tell you to go try Smash Brothers, but maybe step back and appreciate just how zany it is that it merges all these worlds. I think it's one of the best things about that series.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very... I mean, so actually, Sonic... what was that Sonic game that came out not that long ago?
Sonic Lost World.
Yeah, it's got weird crossover stuff with... I want to say it's Zelda, right?
Zelda. Yeah, there's Zelda DLC that I believe is free.
making that the best part of any Sonic game ever made.
Which it doesn't make it a Zelda game. It makes it a Sonic game that has Zelda cosmetic stuff on it, like Sonic with a Link hat on it.
You For know. A brief half second, you may forget you're playing a Sonic game.
I think it's more akin to like the Christmas levels that they've done in the past for Sonic and Knights games.
Yeah.
It's more of kind of a cute skin. I mean, there's a new level, I think.
Mario and Sonic at the Olympics. I mean, ultimately, there's a crossover games of some, but they're not like characters. Oh, shit. The Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem, whatever the order is.
Well, how did you forget that one, James? Oh, because Nintendo hasn't acknowledged it in over a year.
They've acknowledged that it exists, basically. They answer questions going,
it exists as much as, you know, the
Last Guardian Sony exists.
Yeah, thank you. Last Guardian. I mean, if you don't show it to me, it doesn't exist to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is a thing that was announced.
It's all talk. You know, until it prove it. I think Nintendo should show that game. Anyway, let's wrap it up for this week. That was a fun question, but we got to cut it short this week. We'll be back next time with more Radio Free Nintendo. And of course, you can send in your emails for that episode and future ones to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Might have a very special guest next week. We'll see how it sorts out. If not, we'll just bring you more of this bullshit that we just did. And of course, we will be working rapidly behind the scenes to get ready for episode 400, because these guys are all they're coming to Colorado. Mm-hmm. They're going to come hang out with me, and we're going to like get super deep nerdy into Nintendo and podcasting for the whole weekend, and hopefully make something awesome for you guys.
Another year older, and I'm going to Boulder.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you really just?
I just Jesus. Did. I did.
I mean, he's known for his rhyming skills, James. As you I'm will see in person very soon.
I'm a poet, James.
Yeah. So again, thank you so much for supporting us, and thank you for your enthusiasm about episode 400. I guarantee you, no one is more excited than the four of us. So with that, we leave you. Good week, sirs.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Later.